The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome to ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope you're off to a good start today. Darren McFarland here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is in East Nashville. He'll join us in just a bit on the show. Chase McCabe holding court over on the west side of town in Bellevue. And Marquise Munson at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, which is our Wholesale Link game studios powered by RumbleOn.com. I just watched a thrilling Tax Slayer Gator Bowl victory by the Vols over Indiana. I mean, wow, what a comeback. 23-22. It's just gone final, in case you're hearing this for the first time. But Tennessee gets it done, and they defeat Indiana in the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl in thrilling finish, or in thrilling fashion with a great win. What a comeback.
Didn't we see that coming. Didn't we watch that on the plane?
We did.
Coming back from Dallas?
We did, and we got interrupted. We missed a little bit of the comeback. I was going to say we had a very, very rocky. So we're at the Winter Classic in Dallas. We have the worst flight ever from Dallas to Kansas City. I mean, ever.
That's right.
No service on the flight. Everybody stayed in their seat. No attendance. It was an up-and-down flight the whole way to Kansas City. It was one of the worst flights, if not the worst flight I've ever been on. I would say it's probably the worst flight
I've ever been on.
Chase slept like nothing was wrong. I sat there white-knuckling it, sweating the whole flight to Kansas City. He's asleep, acting like nothing is going on. But I did get a chance to watch. It was not on, right? So we picked up in Kansas, right? That's where we started watching, in Kansas City.
Yeah,
is that right? And then Kansas City to home.
Right. And because we got off the
plane. We got off the plane right as, like in the final, 5 minutes. And I had told you, I closed the computers. We're getting ready to land in Nashville. I was like, well, I forgot what play, if it was a sack. Garantano threw a pick or something.
They were down by two touchdowns when we were walking out, because I remember it vividly. We walked out of the security part, and your wife and son were waiting on us, and they had it on. There's that TV right there.
That little, when you're basically exiting, you know, the area, you can't come back in.
Yeah, because Lauren was like, yeah, I guess this is done. And we're like, yeah, this is over. Because they were down by like two touchdowns or maybe even more. I can't remember exactly. And we got our bags, we're waiting on an Uber, and I just happened to pull up my phone. I'm looking at Twitter and I'm seeing all these tweets of like, holy crap, Vols. And I'm going, huh? And I pulled up the score on ESPN, and I just remember looking at you and Lauren going, Tennessee's winning. Tennessee's come back.
And we just looked at each other like,
huh?
Huh? Yeah, right. Literally, right. I said, yeah, right.
Yeah. And it might have been – there was a little bit of time left, because I do remember getting back to the station, getting in my car, and I heard the very end on the Vol Network as it was – and you could tell Bob Kessling was like, what the heck just happened? Like, did I really just witness that?
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was quite. So they were just showing that
on SEC Network. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I just happened to turn on the television up here, and it was on SEC Network, and that was what was on. So I'm sitting here.
I would have watched it too because I don't think I've seen the comeback. I just saw the, you know, I've seen before and after, but I didn't see the actual comeback.
Well, I just got to see it, and it was pretty impressive to see how they finished that off. I mean, it looked very, very bleak, but they found a way to pull it off. Pretty incredible finish. Now, what's interesting is here we are. So that's, you know, the momentum builder for Jeremy Pruitt, and now all we're talking about is how successful they've been on the recruiting trail. And, you know, now expectations are just going to ramp up even more. And I just – it's interesting. I'll be interested to see how Jeremy Pruitt – because I feel like he's kind of going down the same path as Butch Jones, as in, hear me out. That it's the slow – but the first year you get the pat, right? And then things start happening where you start getting excited and you can see it's going in the right direction. And then the recruiting is happening and everything is building, including expectations. And so now, when I say that, now it's going to be up to Jeremy Pruitt to change that narrative, right, and not go down the same exact path as Butch Jones. And we'll see if him and his staff can do that, because it is feeling that, like, at this point under Pruitt, the same – it's got the same feeling, I think, for Vols fans as Butch Jones at this point when he was there. Now can he change that and, you know – keep building and keep having even more success, because it seemed like Butch Jones had reached his ceiling, and it was fast, right? It was like, okay, he can get the players in here, but what does he do with them? He can't take this any further. So we'll see if Jeremy Pruitt can do that. It feels a little bit different because I honestly thought that last season, a lot like the Titans, right? You're looking around, especially after the first two games, you're going, where in the world is this going? Like, oh my gosh, is this going to actually get worse?
Yeah.
And, you know, they turned it around. The Titans didn't get off to the start they were looking for. They turned it around and finished strong. Tennessee finished strong. And so now we'll see, you know.
Both going into year three.
Yeah, right. Where can they go? You know, what does year three look like? Both have had success. Obviously, Mike Vrabel and the Titans have had more success because of this latest run. But we'll see if Tennessee can get even better, and they'll have to because expectations are getting higher, and expectations are there for them to get better. So they can't go the other way, that's for sure. So,
but you brought something up yesterday with Vince that I had been thinking, and I think we've maybe touched on a little bit, but what does Jeremy Pruitt have that Butch Jones didn't? And I think that this is a factor, and that's Phil Fulmer. I think Fulmer has something to do with this. It just with his, whether he's just guiding Jeremy Pruitt or, hey, Coach Fulmer's involved again, so that's appealing. Even though most of these kids probably don't even remember the heyday of Philip Fulmer at Tennessee, I feel like that he is letting Jeremy Pruitt, you know, be the head coach, make his mistakes, but he's there to guide, and I feel like that he's a factor in all of this too.
I think that's fair. I don't think there's any doubt. I think that's fair. Look, I didn't bring that up yesterday to say Fulmer's running, he's steering the ship behind the scenes, but, you know, he is around, and I just find it hard to believe that it's a coincidence that Phil Fulmer is back in charge and things have stabilized and things look like they're going in the correct you know, they're going in the correct way. Things are looking the way they're supposed to look. And so I don't think that's a coincidence. How much involvement does he have? I suspect he has, you know, a lot of involvement. I'm not saying he's the one. It's not like, I'm not saying Jeremy Pruitt is a puppet. I'm just saying he's got input that can be used from a football coach, where the other ADs in the past during this decade run of just there's been no ADs there that the coach could lean on and get real advice, if you know what I mean. I'm not talking about asking for an upgrade or a facility or this. You know, I mean, it's about like actually talking football strategy, talking recruiting, talking, you know, things that you could talk with Philip Fulmer coach to coach, take off the AD hat, put on the coach, and he can do that. And I suspect that is going on, and I don't think it's any different than the recruiting trail, because Philip Fulmer, you know, they had tons of success. Look at all the pros they pumped out on his watch.
It's why he's the AD. I mean, they didn't hire Philip Fulmer to be the AD to worry about, you know, baseball or any other sport. It was because football was in disarray, and they knew that he would be good enough to run the whole athletic department, but the focus was football, that they wanted to bring in who they thought could be the next big-time coach, and that the understanding would be, okay, Philip Fulmer is the AD. He can mentor this guy. I mean, I remember Jeremy Pruitt's introductory press conference where he said, you know, he's excited to know that a championship-winning coach is down the hall, that he can go in there, and he called him coach, and he said, coach, what do you think about this? And that's important, and I believe that we have seen that play out so far as he goes into year three. And again, there have been rocky times, and I thought that and I know we had this discussion too, that Philip Fulmer would try and run things behind the scenes and make Jeremy Pruitt a puppet. I don't think it's necessarily been that way yet. I think he's been more of the advisor. He's been the AD. He's stayed in his lane, and that's a very, very good thing. Now, will it stay that way? Who knows? But right now, I believe that's the lay of the land in Knoxville.
Yep. James is on the line on hold. James, what's
good
up?
Good morning, and thank you for taking my phone call. As a Tennessee fan and a former season ticket holder, obviously I'm pretty excited, and with a little caution, definitely we saw this with Butch Jones in year three having a great top five recruiting class. I think the big difference this time around is, yes, you guys brought up some good points about Coach Fulmer, and certainly that's going to play a factor in the advising part. But let's be honest, Pruitt has assembled himself a really good array of coaches that are good coaches but also damn good recruiters, if I can say that on the air. I mean, Chris Winkie and T. Martin alone have, along with Chaney, that was just – I'm surprised Chris Winkie hadn't been offered an offensive coordinator position yet somewhere, because he has really, really been a great coach on that staff, along with bringing T. Martin back. And I think that combination of having a Tennessee alumni on the coaching staff with Jeremy Pruitt's background, it brings that Nick Saban mentality. I think the big difference you're going to see, and Gary Danielson said this, I think, on either your show a couple of years ago or Jared the GM, that when he went to go watch the practices when Butch Jones was a coach, it was hard to watch. When Jeremy Pruitt came in, he had to overcome that lack of work ethic, those specific details that Pruitt has brought from Alabama, his time at Florida State and Alabama, that you did not have with Butch Jones. Last thing before I hang up here, he is going to utilize his talent. That was one thing Butch Jones did not do a very good job of. We saw that the running backs. To me, you should have been running a mostly I formation with Jalen Hurts. They didn't do it. They underutilized the other running back. I can't
Kamara.
Think of his name now.
But, Alvin Kamara.
Kamara.
Yeah.
So you're going to see a better use and getting them more out of the players, and that's the biggest variable that you did not see with bonehead Butch Jones. And on that note, I'll let you kind of dissect what
hey,
I
James.
Have to say.
Hey, James, yes. Real quick, you said former season ticket holder. Can I ask why? Why did you give up your season tickets? Just out of curiosity.
From 1990 all the way to 2010, we had season tickets in section QQ, if you're familiar with Neyland
yep.
Stadium.
Yep.
You know, between the Derek Dooley era and Derek Dooley era was when we got rid of them. It cost a lot of money to drive from Ashland City. If we had an early game on Saturday, we'd go on Friday night. You're talking lodging, you're talking food, you're talking gas.
Sure.
Quite frankly, I just got tired of
just wasn't the worth
mediocrity.
It. Okay, sure. All right. That's what I wanted to know. I figured that's what it was, and I just wanted to hear it from you. Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, look, I've said
and
it for years.
And last thing here, real quickly, at my age now, I mean, I was a young guy in my 20s, 30s, and early 40s. Right now, I feel like I'm too old to clown Mount Everest in that stadium and deal with, you know, I'd rather just sit at home and watch the games now, to be
okay.
honest with you, at my age now. Sure. But anyway, thank you guys for your time. I'd like to hear what you've got to say about some of the comments I made, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thank you, James, for the call. Yeah, look, I agree. I think he has assembled a really good staff. Anytime you got T. Martin and Chris Winkie, as he brought up, is going to get kids' attention.
Which is still so ironic.
But by the way, let's not forget Jay Graham is on the staff.
Yeah.
He's a running backs coach.
Yeah.
Former running back of the Vols. So,
sure.
I think Jeremy Pruitt has done a really good job of assembling. Obviously, he brought up they paid big bucks for the offensive coordinator, Winton Cheney. So, that has to factor in. Look, anytime a program is successful, you have to look at the assistant coaches. You have to look at the staff because more times than not, you can see why they're having success because this head coach has done a really good job of surrounding himself with really, really good assistants. Sometimes you forget when you go back and you look. That's sometimes when you watch these games, like I've got it here on SEC Network, and you look on the sidelines and you go, oh my gosh, I forgot so and so was on that staff. And the great coaches have been able to pick out and identify good up and coming talent and bring them along as an assistant coach. And I think Jeremy Pruitt is doing that. I don't know how much Philip Fulmer is helping with that. If he did, good for him, but that's kind of going along the lines of what we were talking about.
Yeah. And I think Will Friend has been a good addition too, that was at Colorado State and now coaching the offensive line. Cause you saw that, I mean, it's been for years, the offensive line, they've had problems. And are they all fixed? No, but the offensive line play got better as the year went on. So, yeah, I agree. The staff, he's done a good job assembling that. I would imagine that Philip Fulmer has given him some advice because you've seen a little bit of turnover from year one to now of how to build the proper staff because it's more than gameplay. It's recruiting and all of that. But, I think he's done a good job with it. And again, year three is the one. Year three is where you got to see.
This is critical.
The big jump in year three. And I don't know what that jump is. Is it 8 regular season wins? Is it 9? Time will tell. But
it just can't look the same.
Right. You got to see improvement.
I don't know about big. It's got to be forward progress. It's got to be a step forward, step in the right direction.
Let me ask you this. Is he going to have to at least get one win against a team like Florida or one of these top SEC teams, pretty much, Alabama or a Georgia, to really start having fans to buy in that he can actually do something?
It would be easy to answer yes, but if you don't win the other games, like I said, I'll just refer back to look at the start last year. Like, what would a Georgia win have, softened that? Would it felt any better? Maybe a little bit, but to me it's just the full body of work. Or is one of those wins, obviously beating Florida, who they've had so much struggles with, beating Georgia, Alabama, of course, goes without saying. Any of that stuff, is that great? Sure. Does that get the fan base excited? Absolutely. But you also have to take care of the business of the other. Like, don't stumble against South Carolina. Don't struggle against South Carolina. Don't lose to Missouri. Like, you have to win those games too. Don't lose to Kentucky. Like, you have to win. Don't lose to Vanderbilt. Like, you have to win those games too. So, that would be nice, but it's truly about, in the end, we're talking about 8 or 9 wins. And I think that's forward progress. That is going in the right direction, and then that'll be the buildup for year four.
He's got to get them out of the mindset of looking at the first 4 games, Charlotte at Oklahoma, Furman and Florida. So 3 of those are at home, but it's very easy to go to the mindset of, all right, they're going to start 2-2 and they're going to lose at Oklahoma and they're going to lose to Florida.
Like to see forward progress sneak out one of those games as a win, right? Florida or Oklahoma. I mean, they're both going to be extremely hard, but
and Florida should be the one because it's at home.
Right. I was going to say, obviously, you would lean toward the Florida game being at home as opposed to going to Norman and playing Oklahoma. But you find a way to win one of those games. I think that to me is setting yourself up for what we're talking about. It doesn't mean 2-2 you're dead. You can't do what we're talking about because you can still finish strong, which they did this past season. But sneak one of those wins out, and you're setting yourself up to put yourself in the position of what we're talking about when season 3 is done.
Yeah, that reminds me of like 2015 season when they lost that double overtime game to Oklahoma. And then they start losing like that 1-point game they lost to Florida. And then they lost to an Arkansas team that you're not supposed to lose to. And that was supposed to be a season where with Dobbs and, you know, and that offense that they were supposed to be pretty good. And they still didn't equal up to the expectations. So I think that's what basically the caller is explaining is that Butch Jones expectations was so high that he never lived up to them. And hopefully this is not the same thing with Jeremy Pruitt.
We had a really good conversation to end the show on Friday, a former Predators captain, Mike Fisher. And we wanted you to hear it because it was really good. Like I said, we ended the show on Friday with Mike Fisher. We want you to hear it. We'll come back and play that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Right now we're going to switch gears and talk to someone who is a former captain of the Predators, someone who just was brought up in our trivia, right? Number 12s in Predators franchise history. Mike Fisher is on the line with us. Mike, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging in there. How's quarantine life with the family been?
It's been, you know what, it's been real nice, to be honest. We're, enjoying some good family time, which is not always the case here, you know, with schedules and stuff, but it's trying to get the boys outside as much as possible. And, I mean, I think we're all definitely ready for kind of normal life, but we've been enjoying it as a family. And so, yeah, it's been all right.
And I know, catching deer with you and just outdoors, I mean, heck, through all of this, for what you like to do on the side, being an outdoorsman, it hasn't affected you at all, huh?
No, and living on the farm, it's still, you know, still got to feed the chickens and the horses and collect the eggs and all that stuff. But, turkey season came at the perfect time. I was able to do a little bit of turkey hunting and been fishing, you know, a little bit with my boys. And, so it's that stuff. That's why I love it so much, too, is it's you know, you can still do that, do those stuff. And, you know, Governor Lee came out, which I was a little nervous coming into turkey season, to be honest. Like, what's, you know, how's this going to happen? And then Governor Lee came out and said that turkey hunting is essential. And I couldn't agree with him more.
That's convenient. That works well. That works out well for you.
No doubt. Willie and I have gone through this with kind of the stages of kids. And that your boys are young. And so you're in that unique position of it's you get to see all these stages, right? Because they do develop, and it's interesting going through all the phases the younger they are. How cool has it been for you to kind of go through this with them? You get to see this.
Yeah, you know what, I mean, that's been the blessing, no question, of this quarantine, is like real good solid time. And it's, you know, waking up and figuring out stuff to do and taking, you know, my five-year-old Isaiah now, I'm trying to get him outside the, you know, we've been clearing trails and, you know, doing splitting wood and things like that just to try and get him outside and, you know, work a little bit. And then, you know, Jacob's 15 months now and he loves, you know, going on the four-wheeler, being outside, running around. And he's a lot of work because he does not stop all day long. He takes one nap, but it's – and he's at that stage where, you know, stuff's in his mouth and you kind of got to watch him and you can't let him get away. But I've noticed, like, so with Isaiah, when he was Jacob's age, I didn't see him as much because I was playing and obviously right. Carrie's touring. And, you know, so I connected with him, but not in the same way with Jacob at this age because I'm home every day now and it's like he wants to go out. Everything I do, he's like right next to me. He follows me around the house. It's really cool. But those, you know, those are the things that are really important that, you know, as dads to now, I mean, we're, spending extra time with your kids, which is never a bad thing for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah. My son is 8. And so I remember when he was Isaiah's age, and so he was already playing baseball. He'd already been skating for years at that point. So sports was well ingrained into his lifestyle. So where is he on the sports front? Have you seen him like one thing more than the other? You know, what has he been doing?
You know what his favorite thing to do is? Crafts.
Really? Okay.
Which I don't know where he got it. So right now, I mean, obviously quarantine, but you know, it's crafts every day. Which character can we make? What, you know, we're going to do this. And it's like, I'm the least craftiest guy in the world when it comes to that. But, you know, we had him in skating lessons before this quarantine that was shut down, and he hasn't attached onto a sport yet. He did like to fish. He did like to fish when he was younger. Right now he's not, you know, but I know guys that sometimes 7, 8, 9, they're all of a sudden they get hooked. But, you know, he likes to go with the guys. He'll come hunting with me periodically, and, he does like that. So who knows? We'll see. I don't know. Sport. Their second one, Jacob, he's had a hockey stick in his hand a lot more than Isaiah has.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, he loves it. He's got a hockey stick in his hand a lot. So, yeah, we'll see.
Mike, we're about to really do a deep dive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game with Game 6 in the 2017 playoff run against Anaheim in the Western Conference Final. Just kind of that final journey, the doorstep before punching the ticket into the Stanley Cup Final. Last thing on my end before I turn it over to Willie. What do you remember about that series against the Ducks and just that magical run that season?
Yeah, well, that series against the Ducks was tough. It was rough and, you know, physical, and both teams did not like each other one bit. But I was out, I think it was game 5. Yeah, it was game 5 where Sisson said the hat trick, am I right?
Game 6 and, was the clincher, game, yeah. He had the hat trick.
Oh, he had the hat trick in game 6. I got hurt in
game 4.
I got hurt in game 4, so I was sitting out. But I remember how good Sisson was, my goodness. You know, and clinching that. Peca played unbelievable. But yeah, that was pretty cool. Pretty, you know, no one really, we were an underdog, I think, in that series too. But, you know, Ducks were a really good team that year, and to get by them, and with the injuries we had too, obviously Johansson went, he was gone too, but guys, you know, that was just a solid team effort to get that game 6 win, from the guys. And it was, I don't think I'd seen a room more excited after a game than that. That's for sure.
We're talking to Mike Fisher. Mike, where was your vantage point? You were in street clothes, and I remember the big team picture where everybody, even Johansson, who was hobbled, and Kevin Fiala was still on crutches, I think, and you guys all gathered on the ice, and you took the picture being the captain with the trophy. But where did you sit and watch that game?
I watched it from, I think we watched it downstairs in the room, pretty sure. Usually we'll watch it, and we like listening to you call the game as opposed to no one calling the game out near the fans. So, but no, usually I watch 90% of the games underneath, but I think that's where we watched that game. But, but I did have a concussion. So my memory at that point, it's not great. So, but I remember being able to get on the ice and take the pictures, put the hat on, and, I'm always reminded when I go to the lodge on our and our farm here, because the bobblehead has me. It's got a shiner, so I got it up in this one room, and I'm always reminded of going out onto the ice when I see that bobblehead. They gave me a shiner, so I was like, there you go. But no, that was a cool moment to in the fans too. Like, is to know you're going to the Stanley Cup Final is, I mean, and no one expected it, you know, well, at least we did, but as far as, you know, media and people around the league, no one would expected us to, you know, with that team to make it. We did, and it was awesome.
That was a special night for sure. Mike, or earlier this week, you and Kerry made a very generous donation to help out with the COVID-19 relief fund. So thank you for that. Tell us where that came from, how that all got put together.
From the foundation?
Yeah.
So that was from the Mike Fisher charity shoot that we did in October. So that was all our sponsors and people that came out to help. And so we were able to give $60,000 away to three different charities and that are doing a lot of work downtown. It was, you know, I don't deserve credits. People that came out to do it, I had a lot of fun, and I think you're part of that day as well, Willie. And it was a great day. And we kind of deciding for a while when to give it away, and we're going to do it earlier and we didn't. And then I think there's no better time than now. There's so much need downtown. These charities are, and obviously with people losing jobs too, the money isn't coming in to help some of these less fortunate downtown that are affected by the virus and the tornadoes. So, we're grateful to be able to direct the money from people that helped out that day and help some good charities. So.
Well, it was a first-class event, no question about it. And I learned a lot about what that all is like. And it was a real enthusiastic group that just loves doing that kind of thing. And, Mike, I want to ask you, you just mentioned before, you're teaching your boy some of the skills outdoor on a farm, chopping wood and things like that. How valuable an experience is that to you to know? Just that, that workmanlike thing that develops that could probably help you in your athletic career.
Yeah, well, my dad is probably the hardest. He just had heart surgery in December, and everything's great now. But he does not stop, and he was out of the hospital before anyone had been before with the surgery. And it's like you can't stop him from working. He can do anything too. He can, you name it. He's handyman, but he's always doing stuff for other people. And I remember as a kid, we'd be doing firewood, splitting wood. He would make us, help out and work. And that's kind of what I want to instill, my boys, that you got to work hard and not just, in sports too, obviously. I remember my dad when I was younger, he's like, whatever, as far as where I wanted, if I wanted to play tryout for all-star teams. And I forget exactly how old I was, but he says, I'll pay for, and we didn't grow up with ton of money either, but he's like, I'll pay for your hockey and whatever team you want to try out, whatever. But he's like, you have to give your best. And if you're not giving your best, I'm not going to work hard for the money to pay for it. So like that was very evident in our family that we had to work because my parents were working hard and they didn't have a lot of extra money at all. And so that always stuck with me. And that's what I want to do, with our boys. And because that's, to me, one of the most important traits, and that we gotta try to get our young kids to do, and especially our boys. And that's what I want to do here on the farm. So,
Mike Fisher is with us, former Predators captain. Mike, how much do you, now that you're not playing anymore? I mean, I know you're around, you're doing stuff with the foundation, and everybody knows that you're still visible, but how much do you actually sit down and watch a game, whether it's the Predators or just the NHL in general?
I only watch the Predators, to be honest. And it depends. When we're traveling last year on tour, it's harder just because we're not able to get the games where we are. But when I'm at home, I'll put it on. Usually our kids go to bed around 7:30, so I'll miss usually the first period, then watch kind of last half of the game. But if it's on and I'm at home, I watch as much as I can. And when I played, I didn't watch a ton of hockey. You're always at the rink, well, obviously you're always playing, but you're watching a ton of video. I just didn't sit down to watch a ton of hockey. But now I enjoy watching the guys play, and obviously being obviously a huge Preds fan, you're pulling for them, and you feel like you got a little bit of skin in the game because you know these guys too, and you just cheer them on, want the best for them, and you want them to win. So I love watching the Preds now.
Okay, last thing, Mike. So unusual times, my son's 8. I told you we don't really watch movies, we're always on the go, but obviously the last 2 months have been different. He's discovered School of Rock and Big, so he's watched a couple of movies that he really likes. What was the last movie you guys sat down or show as a family and watched and the boys loved? What would it be?
I'm trying to think of what movie. My son will watch Scooby-Doo 3 times a week, so I watched that with him. And I guess there's a new Scooby-Doo movie coming out here soon. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's good stuff.
That's what I heard, but I think Scooby-Doo is the last one we watched, Scooby-Doo 2. But Yeah, my wife and I, we got into Waco on Netflix.
Just watched that. Wow.
It is. I vaguely remember the story in the 90s, but yeah, man, it's a must watch for sure.
It comes at you from a lot of angles, doesn't it? Wow.
Yeah. Well, we're not finished yet, but we're halfway through, I guess. But it does. Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. But yeah. So
if you're halfway through episodes 4, 5, and 6, buckle up. It's going to get real interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Mike, really appreciate it. You and the family continue to be safe through these times. It's always good to catch up with you, and we certainly will talk to you down the road. Thanks for doing this.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Hey, you should enter the ESPN The Game Nashville's uniform drawing contest for a chance to win a jersey from Nashville Predators, Nashville SC, the Sounds, Vanderbilt Football, or MTSU Basketball. You can download a jersey template from thegamenashville.com or draw your own and submit for your chance to win. Game listeners will then vote for the top three uniforms from each category, hockey, soccer, football, basketball, and baseball. All the winners will get a jersey from that sport. Enter today at thegamenashville.com. Appreciate Mike Fisher. Wanted you to hear that. He joined us to close out Friday's show. Good conversation with him. We'll get into a little bit of the recruiting scene to kick off the second hour of the program. It looks like the Jets have identified a player that they are very interested in signing. He is a former Titans cornerback, and it looks like Logan Ryan may be signing a one-year deal with the New York Jets. I still don't think Logan Ryan played this particularly well. I think he was a better player on the field than some of the decisions that he made off the field, and I'll continue to say that. That's my opinion. I think it was just not a good play on his part. You don't, no matter what you believe, you don't take that public. You're just setting yourself up for failure. You're just setting yourself up not to have that happen. And so if you draw a line in the sand, but yet you're not willing to do it, when you draw the line in the sand and you come out and say that, then to me, you have to be willing to go down with that. And I think it's silly to do that. Because if he doesn't sign for what's been put out there with the Jets and he takes less, people are going to be like, what happened to you saying it was going to take at least that? You know, you just set yourself up. And I don't think he's handled it well. I think there's been some things that he's done through this process that I'm a little surprised. He's a smart guy. He's a good football player. But he's done some things in the past that I haven't agreed with either. Last year, I thought that, something that's really never been brought up, but I'll bring it up. I'm willing to go there because I thought it was a poor decision on his part. He's out there doing good work in the community, and we're really appreciative, and people should be appreciative of the really good work that he and his wife did in the community. And it's a special place for me because he's helping out pets. He's helping out animals. He's helping out dogs. And, you know, whenever you're doing good things and you're trying to raise money, you would think you would welcome all help. And, you know, behind the scenes, he kind of closed it off to just certain media members to help get the word out about that. And I think that's a terrible decision, especially when others are willing to help you and you're saying, no, I'm just going to do it with certain media members. And he got burned, and he got burned bad. And then all of a sudden he was willing to talk to anybody and everybody about his charity. That's a bad decision. I'm sorry. Say whatever you want, but that's a bad decision. I didn't agree with it then, and I don't agree with it now. And obviously, if he could do it over, I would hope that he didn't pull a Scottie Pippen and say, I would do it all over again. I would hope he would say that was a bad decision. He's a good football player. He's a good person, and he did a lot of good things here, but I think he, off the field, handled some things poorly, in my opinion.
I don't think you're wrong.
Well, I think he did correct what happened because I do remember him promoting that event on our show. I don't think you were there that particular day.
No, but he did it because he got burned.
Chase and I.
Because he got burned, and then he opened it up to everybody else.
But hopefully he learned from his mistake. And like you said, hopefully he wouldn't say, hey, I would. Hopefully he would do the opposite of the Scottie Pippen. I agree with you on that. But, you know, people make mistakes. I'm a big fan of Logan Ryan, and I do wonder if he could do this over again, the free agency process, if he had played his cards a little bit different. But maybe it'll work out for the Jets. I mean, I think this was a tough call. for any potential free agent, because I don't know if they could have seen what was coming here and how it might affect the market. I think it's fair to say that for a lot of mid-level free agents and even guys who, like Logan Ryan, still have a lot to offer, it had to have hurt his value, what's going on right now. I don't think there's any question.
Yeah, I mean, he put himself in a bad position, because I agree with everything you just said, Darren, because to go out and say I'm not going to take any less than $10 million. Well, most of the GMs in the league, if not all of them, just said, "All right, see ya. You come back when you come off that
next option
that horse."
Yeah, yeah, right.
And now, you know, who knows what the deal looks like with the Jets?
I haven't seen any numbers yet.
I haven't either. But now I would imagine that it's less than $10 million. I don't think the Jets are signing him for a 1 year, $10 million deal. So.
But it is the Jets, so you have to always say that. It is the Jets, so you never know. They could sign him for $14 million. Who knows?
And then we'd go, well,
yeah,
it's the Jets.
If there's a team that will jump out there and overpay, the Jets are on that list.
The Jets are definitely on that list.
Yeah, so I like Logan a lot. And
You do more than like him.
No, I know, and I brought that up this morning. I even referenced you. I said Darren used to make fun of me about my man crush with Logan Ryan because I said pay him, like keep him, but – you know, I understood that there were other priorities that had to be taken care of, and so as much as I hate to see him go, I don't think he played this right either. And you know, I'd tell him that to his face, and I hope that he realizes that looking back on it, that he didn't go about this the right way. Now, with all that said, I do feel like there's some there's some John Belichick in this, that John Robinson just has gone about this the way that the Patriots would and got 3 years out of him. High level, but time to move on and find somebody that's younger and cheaper, and they did that in Christian Fulton. So I think there's both of that in play, but I believe him when he says that the Titans really didn't try and make an offer, because I don't think they wanted to pay him $10 million a year, and that's all he wanted.
He went on Double Coverage podcast, and that's with the McCourty twins, and here's what Logan Ryan had to say.
It is a real business, and this time's a little different because, you know, kind of to get through it, Tennessee never really offered me a contract. They never really talked extension. And we never really talked in free agency. They didn't really try to bring me back. And it was kind of the whole, we'll monitor the market and you're probably going to get too much. And we probably can't afford because we got a lot of players on this team. And I understood it. I understood that completely. I'm like, yeah, we do have Derrick Henry deserves to get paid. And Ryan Tannehill deserves a contract somewhere, and we have like 20 free agents and Jack Conklin. So I understood all that for sure. And, you know, the way this free agency hit, you know, with COVID and everything, kind of the marketplace, the money was hard to find in some areas after that first day, you know, and the multi-year options I was looking at, I just didn't feel right for my family. It didn't feel right for me. I believe I wanted to take my time. And when I approached Tennessee with a one-year option, I said, hey, look, I'm willing to come back and work with the team with a one-year deal to earn the right for an extension, or earn the right to go back to free agency next year. And I just want my salary, what I made last year. I think anybody who plays really well in a contract year wants a raise. You know, you play in a contract year, you're going to get paid, right? So I said, look, I mean, I'll come back for the same rate. I want to keep this thing going. And they weren't really interested in that. And that's when I kind of knew.
See, I mean, you've already when you draw your foot in the sand and that line, you had already misplayed it. You had already played it poorly. I guess where I'm a little confused, and I know Teron Davenport said this. He brought this up yesterday. Exactly what Logan Ryan just said when I asked him, why don't you think he's been signed to this point? When he says he's had multi-year deals on the table, but it just wasn't right. What wasn't right? Was it a 2 year deal for $5 million a year? What wasn't right about it? You're getting ready to sign a 1 year deal. You had told the Titans you were going to sign that you'd be willing to sign a 1 year deal. Yet you're getting multi year deal offers, and it wasn't right. So what am I missing? What wasn't right about it?
Yeah, I didn't really understand that.
But yet a 1 year deal with the Jets is right. That makes more sense.
Do you think he was offered a 1 year deal at any point by the Titans at any price?
No. If you listen to him, the answer is no.
No.
Well, but he said that he wanted the same, you know, the same that he made last year. I think when, like you said, that sort of negotiates and sets a point where if the team isn't there, then maybe there's nothing to discuss in their mind. Would it have been crazy to bring him back for 1 year? I don't think he's completely being unreasonable. He had a heck of a year.
He was a
driving force for the defense. He was an important cog. This is where I see both sides of it. I think because this is a unique offseason, then that's maybe what Logan Ryan misjudged, I think, at that point.
That's why you.
But
don't
I don't think he's being.
Stuff.
I agree, but I don't think he's unreasonable to say, "Hey,
say
I had a pretty good year. Why should I take a pay cut after having a really good year?"
Yes, but say that behind privately. Don't say that out loud.
Don't negotiate through the media.
Don't negotiate publicly. It's silly. And oh, by the way, there is a human element to this. Maybe John Robinson was like, "Oh, his initial of you know I better get paid at least what I made last year." Maybe John Robinson's like, "Okay, well, cross him off list." Exactly what we just said. Moving along, moving on. By then, it's too late. Once he's been crossed off the list, it's too late.
Yeah, and I just – you never want to throw out, well, I'm only going to play for this because you're – I mean, like I said, more than half the teams, most of the teams are going to go, see ya. There is a cheaper option out there somewhere. And I read this completely wrong because I'll admit it. I said with you guys that I feel like Logan Ryan would probably work with them, that if they wanted him back, that he would be willing to take a little less. And then – free agency starts, and he says he wants to make at least what he made last year. So I read that wrong. I was completely off base on that. That he'd be willing to take the hometown discount, as they call it. So, it is what it is, and I hope that this is true. That he's signed a deal with the Jets. I would love to see him, you know, get another deal and get another chance, and maybe get the long term deal next season. But I agree that just the way he's gone about this has not worked in his favor, and hopefully he'll do it differently next time.
Let's go to Doug. He is on hold. He wants to weigh in. Doug, what's up?
Hey, guys. I'm a big Logan Ryan fan. You know, I think he plays well, and he brought a lot to the table. But it just kept smelling like that, you know, as intelligent as he is, it just smells like the works of a bad agent. He didn't know how to tell his client to be quiet, and he didn't know how to handle the business himself. So it just reeked all over the place. I mean, when do you just say, hey, let me handle it? The market's not doing this. Or when do you just say, hey, man, we're not going to be able to get this for you. We'll take that. It just reeked of a bad agent. And I'll hang with it.
It's a misreading of the market. I think Doug's right on it. The market was different this year. I think there have been other years where I think Logan Ryan would have easily been able to get probably a multi-year deal and get an increase in pay based on the year he had, right? There have been other years where even us broadcasters are sitting here scratching our heads. You're paying that much for that guy? I mean, there's been plenty of teams down the road. But, A, I think teams are starting to learn that once you get 29 or 30, it really isn't about rewarding somebody for what they've done. It's more projecting what they're going to be worth in the next couple of years. And, B, you throw this situation, this unique situation with the virus – on top of everything, and it changed the market.
Well, I will say this, Doug, and I don't disagree with you. I think certainly that there is some agent blame in this, but that's why I brought all this up. It is disappointing. Logan Ryan is a great guy in their locker room. He's a great guy in the community. He's a great guy to deal with. He's a smart, intelligent football player, really talented football player. And yet there's a pattern of, I don't know who's to blame. Some of this is definitely in his lap without a doubt. But I bring up the media thing, and there's a lot of you who say, I don't care. Well, that's fine. But I'm bringing it up because I thought it was a poor play on his part, and it's still, in my mind, a very poor play. And it burned him bad, and that's his decision. That's not his agent telling him that. But when you're out there trying to do good in the community, and there's people out there willing like us and others to help you get the word out and help you raise money and do good things and say nice things about you because of the nice work you're doing off the football field, and you say thanks but no thanks, I'm only interested in a certain group of media members to get my word out. That to me is silly when you're doing good work. Why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense at all. And then, oh, by the way, you do that and then you get burned by a media member. You get burned badly by a media member that all of us could have been like, wow, duh, gosh, who would have ever seen that one coming? And then all of a sudden you want to open it back up to I'll talk to whoever. And now, sure, I welcome all of you to get my word out. Help me get the word out. It's like, wow, okay. And we still did it. We're not going to turn, you know, we're not going to turn away to something good to help people. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I thought it was a good decision. I thought it was a horrible decision. But that's on him. That's on Logan Ryan. That's not on his agent. And so the point is, it does seem like there's been a little bit of a pattern of while we say all these good things about him, that there's also some bad decision-making. That's, some of that's got to go in his lap, or a lot of it has got to go on his lap. When I talk about what I just brought up about, you know, doing good work in the community and only and closing it just to certain individuals, and now the way he handled the offseason, I thought, quite honestly, the thank you Titans goodbye was poor decision on his part too. Why? Why would you say that? You haven't even signed anything. You haven't found a new home. Why would you tell them goodbye on social media? I just felt like a lot of this stuff is, I've been really surprised how Logan Ryan has handled a lot of the stuff, because he just doesn't come off as that type of person. He's a, you know, he's a well thought out individual, and yet I'm showing all these things that I don't understand, you know, what his thought process was. I don't understand why he told the Titans, thanks for the memories. You do that now, or whenever you get in a deal done with the Jets, then you can thank the Titans. But why would you just come out and just say, hey, yeah, it's very clear, they gave Christian Fulton my number. It's, you know why? Because he was mad. Because he was bitter. That's why he did it.
Yeah, but I mean, even you said once they gave the number away, that's the writing on the wall.
Right, but why do that, though? Because you're mad. Is it a good idea to do it, though, overall? I ask you guys, even if you're mad, should you do that?
At some point you do it. I look at that timing as, again, they gave the number away, so that pretty much says, okay, they're moving on or have moved on. So I guess he looked at it that way. But I can understand your point of view that, yeah, he comes off mad or butthurt or however you want to put it. So it just
red butt.
Yeah, I mean, that's the RBF. That's what he's got. But, look, at the end of the day, this is the part that stinks, because you hate to see it end contentiously with, you know, some hurt feelings and bad blood on either side, which I think they'll get over. Logan Ryan had a solid, solid 3 years for this franchise, and is going to be – Christian Fulton has very big shoes to fill. But at the end of the day, it's a business. That's a cliche, and John Robinson had to do what he had to do.
So is recruiting. It's a big business. We'll talk to John Garcia, Jr. He's the director of scouting for SI Now, and we will kick off the second hour with him next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to chumbacasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.